child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter. Ooh, child, things are gonna get easier. Ooh, child, things will get brighter.
Someday, yeah, put it together and we'll get it undone.
Good afternoon, and welcome back to Naturalistic Support. I'm Arnel Doray, and joining me today is Elaine Durbach. Hi, Elaine.
Hi, Arnel.
Naturalistic Support is a unique approach to lasting personal growth and healthier, more satisfying relationships. On this program, we help each other, combining a progressive understanding of our human experience with peer support. And that involves you calling us to talk about yourselves, as well as to talk to each other. Our number is 212-209-2877. And with Valentine's Day just a couple days away, it seems like a good time to continue our discussion from last week, looking at how naturalistic humanism can help us improve our closest relationships. And if my voice cracks, it's because I'm fighting a cold, so bear with me, loyal listeners. Anyway, before we dive in, tomorrow is a really big day. February 12th is Darwin Day. So I'd like to wish a happy Darwin Day to all of our naturalistic, free-thinking, and science-oriented listeners. The Darwinian Revolution was the first step in a long process of demystifying and naturalizing the human experience. And it's a process which continues to this day, one which we firmly support. Also, on the same day in the same year, February 12, 1809, when Charles Darwin was born, the man who gave us the theory of natural selection, so was born Abraham Lincoln, February 12th in 1809. So February 12th is a really portentous day for humankind. Okay, now on to today's topic. Last week, we spoke about several techniques that are key to fighting fair. And we'll go over some more techniques a little further into the program. We also started to touch on some of the ways that naturalistic humanism, in particular, is very supportive of healthier relationships. Now, throughout the program, most of the time when we talk about you and your partner can be anyone with whom you share a close relationship. That can be a friend, a family member, a roommate, a coworker, a classmate, a neighbor, or anyone else with whom you interface closely. Okay, let's go back over how naturalistic humanism can help us improve our relationships. Elaine, maybe you want to take it.
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to. I find it all really challenging. This is not, you know, not lazy stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, so, through a naturalistic humanism lens, although we're the proximate cause of our behavior, it's important to recognize that we're not its ultimate cause. We don't choose to have the determinants, that is the genes and the experiences, which make us who we are. The genetic and environmental determinants that ultimately cause us to think, feel, and behave as we do are unchosen. They're a matter of luck. and we're always behaving in the only way our determinants allow.
So let's just stop there for one second. You know, I mean,
it's a big idea to swallow.
Yeah, it's a big idea, but you know, it kind of seems, on a certain level, it seems kind of apparent that, you know, we don't choose, you know, to be born to the people we were born to. We don't choose our socioeconomic level. We don't choose the things that happen to us. But those things are ultimately determining how we develop and who we become. And, you know, there are people that have a much better background in terms of supporting their fullest expression of their human potential compared to others who lack that. And, you know, the fact that the way we are is a matter of luck seems, you know, not that controversial to me, but...
But you think how we treat people, how we tend to think, well, if somebody is, you know, being an idiot, if they're, you know, that's because they're choosing to be stupid.
Right.
Or if they're beautiful, you know, that it's somehow an honor that they deserve to be incredibly good looking.
Yeah.
No, we didn't choose any of these things. They're not to our credit or our discredit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, this is a key idea in naturalistic humanism. You know, it just feels like unless we kind of get this part of it, it's very hard to argue for the progressive society that so many of us who are WBAI listeners and programmers want. Right? I mean, we want a society that doesn't fault people for what they were unlucky enough not to have.
And it brings us to this idea of fairness.
Yeah.
You know, what? How do we make things fair?
Yeah. And I just think that, you know, this gives us a very strong rationale. I mean, there are people who use all kinds of rationales, and we're going to do another program on traditional rationales for progressive politics and progressive agenda versus the naturalistic humanist rationale, which I feel is...
You're gonna try and poke the nest?
Yeah, I think that's what we do here on WBAI. We are nest pokers. Anyway, please continue.
Okay, so this is the what we call meta-awareness. I love that word. It's such a good, huge umbrella word. We're also always acting in the healthiest way that we can. We're naturally inclined to be cooperating and caring and wanting to participate and contribute. And a lot of people will argue that, but I think that when you really test it and you really look, each one of us does feel that.
Yeah, but there's, you know, the second part of that sentence is the big proviso.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, you could say that we're all inclined to cooperate and caring, wanting to participate and contribute. And clearly there are people who aren't. So how do you explain that?
Yeah, exactly. We the degree to which we do all of that, the degree to which our behavior is healthy is determined by the degree that our developmental and life needs are satisfied. And whether or not those needs have been met is, again, purely a matter of luck. So recognizing the pivotal role that luck plays in everyone's life, it inspires us to offer kindness, humility, and forgiveness to others and to ourselves.
And may I say to that, amen.
And I might argue with some of it because some people, but as you say, these are the exceptions rather than those who prove the rule. The people come out of really lousy circumstances, sometimes are magnificent human beings.
Yes, but it doesn't defy the idea that there are determinants that are contributing to their success, that they might not be visible.
That's
you know,
true.
We might not see them because the determinants that ultimately impact us and make us who we are, you know, they're like an iceberg. We see a tip, that we can identify, oh, there's the iceberg. But you know what? Most of the iceberg you can't see. Most of it is below the surface. So there are, you know, the volume of determinants that make us who we are, and the variety is, you know, it's a multitude.
It's very complex. I'm just thinking of tell me if this example fits. Two friends who came out of a home where there was alcoholism. The one became an alcoholic. She was super sensitive, super bright, couldn't resist it, got more and more hooked into really excessive consumption. She got ill, died very young. Her younger sister saw her, observed her, very similar person, warm, sensitive, bright, horrified by what she saw in her sister. And because of that circumstance in her growing up years, steered clear of alcohol as if it was the plague. Yep. Never went near it.
Mm-hmm.
Just a circumstantial difference between them. They were very similar.
Yeah, but, you know, that's a big, big difference. Had it been the other way around, or had the older sister had an even older sister who had succumbed to alcoholism, she might have had a different outcome as well.
Exactly, exactly. Look, we have a president who followed an example like that. One of the strange things about him.
Saw
a brother and avoided that example.
Yeah, we would have been better off if he went the alcoholism route.
The early demise version.
Oh my goodness.
I shouldn't have said that. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's all right. Nobody's going to fault. None of our listeners are going to fault you for that. So this has big impact on the idea of personal responsibility because, you know, a big part of what fuels our anger when we fight with each other, when we get short with each other, is righteous indignation because we are blaming. And naturalistic humanism gives us a mechanism not to blame, and part of that is a different understanding of personal responsibility. Although naturalistic humanism regards the concept of personal responsibility somewhat differently than it's thought of in our mainstream culture, there are some points of agreement. As it is in mainstream culture, within a naturalistic humanism framework, acknowledging that our actions and the effects they have on others is important. In this way, a naturalistic humanist will take responsibility for their behavior as would anyone else, saying something like, yes, that was something I did. So you're acknowledging what you did.
Yeah. And even if you have an idea of the causes or the ingredients that brought you there.
Yeah, I mean, that's not, you know, what somebody wants to know when they're like, do you realize, you know, what you did? Do you realize, you know, how that affected me? And you could say, yeah, that was my behavior. I acknowledge that. And a naturalistic humanist will also have thoughts and feelings about their behavior, ranging from, I really like how I handled that, to, oh, I wish I had handled that better. Or even, oh man, I'm really upset at how I just behaved. When a naturalistic humanist behaves in a manner that is hurtful to another, if they're emotionally healthy, they're going to want to remedy the situation. Where a naturalistic humanism approach differs considerably from the mainstream involves the understanding that no matter how we behave, and no matter how it makes us feel, we understand that it is the only behavior our determinants would allow. Accordingly, while we can take responsibility for our behavior in the most proximate sense, yes, I did that, not in the ultimate sense, because our behaviors do not originate from us.
Such a fine, delicate point, that, Arnel. It's an intellectually challenging point, that fine line between knowing that you can't change any of what brought you to this moment.
Yeah.
And yet you are here saying you've got to acknowledge it, and you've got to, you're still the actor on this stage.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, what we do has impact in our own lives and in the lives of others. But understanding that being proximately responsible differs from being ultimately responsible removes the justification both for self-blame and for the blaming of others. Because, see, here's where things go off the rails. Our fear of being blamed causes us to rigorously, most people will rigorously resist taking responsibility for anything they think might diminish their esteem in the opinion of others, or even in the opinion of themselves. So, you know, people get these defensive, they take these defensive positions where, no, I didn't do anything wrong. You know, and that becomes obstacle. I mean, if you can't get somebody to acknowledge that they behaved a certain way, or that their behavior had a certain impact, you know, you've hit a wall communication-wise. You can't really fix anything unless you have people willing to acknowledge how they've behaved and how it's impacted others. But when you blame somebody, when you say, you know, you could have behaved differently, but you behaved this way, and that's because you're bad. That's because something's wrong with you. That's because you are a psychotic lunatic. You know, just the blaming, the throwing of, you know, names and characterizations, it's a non-starter for an intimate relationship. In contrast, because naturalistic humanists do not blame themselves, they're actually more likely to take responsibility for their actions than someone who believes that they are ultimately responsible.
It makes me think that watching an argument between two naturalistic humanists has got to be a real pleasure, where both sides are willing to say, yeah, this is who I am at this moment, and this is what I did.
Oh, but for the day when they will be two naturalistic humanists. Anyway, this all frees us to reflect in a way that we wouldn't otherwise. Elaine?
Yeah. I mean, not feeling ultimately responsible enables honest introspection without having to defend against feelings of guilt and shame, or at least having the recognition that feelings of guilt and shame are undeserved. This perspective makes it possible to reflect far more productively. And this perspective has substantial implications regarding how to fight fair, because it removes the rationale for blaming. Blaming thwarts our efforts to communicate effectively. When someone's blaming you, it's very hard not to be defensive. And have you ever shut down from communicating because you felt like the other person was blaming you? I think all of us have been there. Yep. Have you ever been able to stop yourself from blaming your partner? What do you think about the guidelines we've just mapped out for fighting fair? So call us, 212-209-2877.
Yeah, so we want to hear from you. What's been your experience with close relationships? Are you struggling with trying to improve a close relationship? Or do you have a partner who's been willing to work on it with you? Again, our number is 212-209-2877. We want to hear from you. Maybe you've gone through the struggle with someone and you were both successful. Or maybe you had to walk out of a relationship that couldn't break the cycle of toxic fighting. Again, our number is 212-209-2877. Anything you have to tell us about relationships of intimacy, of closeness. We want to hear.
Can you imagine if we could inspire some people today to get some of this sorted out before Saturday?
Yeah, what a different Valentine's Day would be.
What a challenge. Okay.
Okay, so yeah, the clock is ticking. Continually.
Okay, so we're thinking about forgiveness. Great topic before Saturday, if anybody needs to do this. Another important aspect of improving our relationships is that path in forgiving, regardless of whether we decide to remain in a relationship or not. By forgiving, we free ourselves. Forgiving can be a significant step to building a better relationship, or it can facilitate moving forward and opening up to a new relationship. Do you have a clip from a video series?
Yeah, this is a clip from a video series called Buddhism in English, and it features a Buddhist monk, and he's explaining how letting go of our anger and resentment is really about protecting ourselves. Here goes.
The real forgiveness must be there with forgiveness and also wisdom. So when the forgiveness and the wisdom combine together, then you can forgive people truly and correctly. So have to do that. So when you forgive people with wisdom, you're not saying that it is okay, you hurt me, and I'm going to fall into the same trap of you, right? I will believe you again and again. That is not the way. You can forgive people. You can let go of the anger. You can forget about the hurt that they have done to you. And also still, you can stay away from their life and their negativity. Okay? That is where you combine the forgiveness and the wisdom, right? Then, if you forgive like that, if you forgive in such a way, then you will never fall into traps of those people who are going to use you. So, understand what real forgiveness is. When you forgive people, you're not forgiving them. Really, in reality, you're forgiving you, right? You're saying that, no, I'm not going to take this negativity anymore. I'm not going to hold on to this anger and resentment anymore because I love myself. I don't want to hurt myself. I always care about my spiritual development, my good qualities, and my thoughts. So when you do that, you can forgive people and stay away from their negativity and their cheatings. So that is the correct way to forgive someone. So practice this and let go of those angry thoughts and resentments in your mind. Namo Buddhaya.
I think the Buddhist got it right.
That's a very gentle, loving way to approach things.
And it's also, I think, self-preserving. I mean, when we carry around resentment, it's toxic to us. And it damages us. And, you know, that's why forgiving another person is not just giving something to the other person. It's really giving something to yourself. You're letting go of that injury. It's easier said than done.
Very much so.
Yeah, it's not easy. But listeners, have you ever experienced getting forgiveness from someone? Have you ever been forgiven?
And to me, it seems that this notion of understanding the ultimate causes of why somebody is how they are, doing what they're doing, that's a key to this feeling of forgiving. I mean, if you understand what somebody came from and that they didn't choose to be the asshole they're being, it's so much easier. And it's easier to see how we might have been like them.
Yeah, had things been different, we would have behaved the same. And, you know, when you recognize that, I mean, so much of our judging and blaming comes down to thinking, you know, I can't believe that guy acted like that. I would never act like that.
Yeah.
It's always, I wouldn't do that terrible thing that this other person did. But if you had that person's determinants, you really absolutely would.
Yeah, yeah. We try to other the other person, or we feel that they're othering us.
Yeah.
And we're not that othered.
No. Have you ever forgiven someone, listeners? Give us a call. Tell us about it. How did it feel? Our number is 212-209-2877. Call us and tell us how you faced challenging relationships. Meanwhile, I'd like to play a clip from a video called Fighting Fair Rules: How to Fight Fair to Grow in Relationships. The clip's produced by a group called Thrive Union and written by Daniel Honey. It offers several good recommendations for healthy relationships.
Learning how to fight fair promises to turn conflict into growth opportunities rather than relational erosion. Marriage researcher John Gottman shows us what fighting unfair looks like. First, criticism, or attacking a person instead of their behavior. The difference is a partner saying, "You are so stupid," instead of, "I really didn't like what happened last night." Second, contempt, or showing superiority and disdain. It's like saying, "You are just too stupid to get this," through words, action, or tone. Third, defensiveness, or claiming self-righteousness or victimhood to avoid responsibility. It's saying, "I'd never do that," to deny a real concern. Or, "You hurt me first, so it's your fault." Fourth, stonewalling, or refusing to engage. If a partner wants to talk and you refuse to respond or just walk out of the room, you're stonewalling. Fighting unfair doesn't resolve our frictions, but fighting fair will go beyond resolution to actually strengthen our relationships. Principle number one: focus on understanding, not on being right. Never try to punish anyone by making them wrong. Therapist Jeffrey Rubin offers this advice to any arguing couple who want to improve their relationship. If you follow one principle, you'll save yourself a lot of time, money, and tears, being more interested in understanding your spouse than in winning. Otherwise, this process will take longer than it needs to, and you'll waste a lot of money trying to win. And you'll both lose, guaranteed. Principle number two: come from a place of humility and understanding. This means admitting when you're wrong and acknowledging your partner's good points when you disagree. Practice active listening, repeating back what your partner is saying and asking if you're getting it right. Principle three: aim for a win-win outcome where both parties walk away feeling better than they did before. Our brains are hardwired to win, but unless we start thinking of mutually beneficial solutions, our relationships will fail. Say a couple frequently fights about one partner's overspending. A win-win solution could be that the overspender gets to spend a certain amount completely guilt-free. The thriftier partner helps set the amount and enjoys staying within a budget. Both partners address their need, feeling heard, and walk away happier together. Keep in mind that feelings are real and need to be validated before a resolution can be made. Use I statements to foster understanding and avoid criticism or contempt. Say, "I feel hurt," rather than, "You hurt me." Principle four: de-escalate. Sometimes friction can create overwhelming negative momentum. When things are too emotionally charged, take a break or go on a walk to clear your head. Avoid loaded words such as "always" or "never," which catastrophize conflicts. Say, "I feel like you're arriving late more often," instead of, "You're always late." And when appropriate, hug it out. Hugging releases incredible bonding hormones that can cut through resentment, anger, and blame. Principle number five: respect boundaries. Determine what volume and tone of voice is appropriate for resolving conflicts. Don't physically threaten or intimidate your partner. Avoid verbally attacking them or shaming them. If your partner violates your boundaries and does not correct their behavior when asked, leave until your boundaries are respected.
You're listening to
Naturalistic Support right here on 99.5 FM
WBAI New York.
Non-commercial, listener-sponsored
Peace and Justice Radio.
Wednesdays from 2 to 3, Naturalistic Support is taking listener calls, offering a revolutionary new way to think about ourselves and reach out to each other.
I just wanted to call in to give encouragement to the last caller.
It hit right on where I am right at this moment.
You really hit the proverbial nail on the head.
I really connected with what you were saying about loneliness.
We are hardwired to help each other.
Getting past the blame, owning your own truth, letting go of judgmental thoughts.
I felt so fortunate to hear this.
You went through every single one of the things that I've been working on with my life. Now you said all that, I'm like, holy cow, what is this guy doing? Is he talking to me right now?
The Naturalistic Revolution is a game changer. Listen to us break it down on Wednesdays from 2 to 3.
I want to thank you so much. You helped me so much.
I wonder why you stayed by me this long. Seems by now you would have packed up and moved on. But I know that you believe that things in life work out, and that might be what true love's all about. I remember when I felt lost and betrayed. You said it's only money, we're okay. Guess you knew where I was headed when others had their doubts. That might be what true love's all about. Might be what true love's all about.
And we're back. You're listening to Naturalistic Support. This is Arnel Doray. I'm here with Elaine Durbach, and today we're talking about improving our relationships. Our number is 212-209-2877, and we have a caller on the line. This is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling, and where are you calling from? Hello? Caller? Hello?
Hello, hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, do you hear me?
Yeah, I was told I'm the second caller. I guess I'm the first. This is
Yeah.
This is Attila. How are you both?
Good, Attila.
Hi, Attila.
To hear from you.
Hi. Well, yes, Eve, it is so good to just let go of negative feelings that did occur in the past from someone else or another group, because then it just... it's the tabula rasa. It sets you free. It's a blank slate. And it feels so good. And regardless of how much negativity there was perceived by me from other people, particularly family, let's just stay with family at the moment, it's difficult because there's that phenomenon of family systems, as I'm sure the both of you have heard of.
Yeah.
And, yeah, absolutely.
It does feel good to just... okay, let's just let go. Let's have some gratitude about what is good about that person, those people who may have slighted me or made me feel negative in some way in the past. And it just feels good to just let go, look at the positive, and move forward.
I think that's, you know, an absolute key turning your attention to the part that feels good.
Yeah. Have you struggled with family relationships, Attila?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You know, I have, not to get too deep into my personal details, but, you know, I have
Get deep.
don't get him into trouble.
I have family on this continent, in this continent, and I have family in the European continent, and that in and of itself causes a sort of blame game for the recent world history that I have had to deal with.
Wow.
And I had nothing to do with the recent war.
They see you as representing?
Excuse me?
They see you representing this country?
Oh, absolutely. I have family in Europe, and I'm American, born and raised here in the New York vicinity. And many times I've heard, you know, comments thrown at me, and sometimes in an embarrassing way when there was a group setting, like, oh, there he is, the American. And there's adjective before the American, which I'm sure the two of you could imagine what that may have been. Yeah.
But you know, like, I would imagine, Attila, that can't hurt that deeply because, I mean, you know, clearly you're not the person who is causing these problems, and you don't support the people who are causing these problems. So doesn't that
way,
help
right.
to know?
It doesn't
know.
Hurt because I had nothing to do with it. However, right. when you're called a negative, we belong to a group. I'm sorry. Yeah. When you're called a negative name.
Yeah.
That many Europeans have used for Americans in a group setting.
Yeah.
When you're basically the only American at the table and there's 20 other people at the table and everybody there is born or raised in Europe, it can be quite embarrassing. Let's put it that way.
You guys have some big Zoom calls, don't you? Jeez.
I don't do Zoom whatsoever.
Okay.
I'm actually at the point, and speaking of moving forward, I have come to the realization, you know what? Live and let be. They want to come visit America and be family-like and see what New York and if the rest of this country is about, come on over. And they have extended the same invitation to me. But, you know, I'm at the point where, okay, you know, all right, let's just, we know where we stand. Let's move forward and let bygones be bygones. Now, on another perspective of this whole thing, why a lot of people just can't let go of the past, I believe as a person with an anthropology background, that was my major in college, and I've taught social studies. The issue, I believe, since humans are in the family of primates, and if that is true, evolution is true as far as how we humans have gotten here, then the problem with people letting go so easily, I believe, is because, well, if we're primates, we want to keep climbing the tree to look for the fruit. And we want to avoid that branch that we know may break. And that's why I believe we are hardwired to remember the negative so much more than the positive, because we want to keep climbing.
Yeah.
And if we know of something that's going to stop us, we're going to avoid it or hold on to that negativity so we don't forget what might harm us.
Right. Well, the classic example is, you know, if you mistake the rustling of the wind for a tiger, that is very consequential rather than the other way around. So if you kind of assume the worst, that's kind of self-preserving, but there's a big cost to always assuming the worst.
Exactly. Put you in a negative frame of mind. It can make you paranoid unnecessarily, but you know, what is our existence about? We have a short life. Let's try and enjoy it and be happy. Yes, we have to be cautious of the negative and the harmful, but we're not here just to live in harm and in fear and in anger, because then why are we even here? You know, what are we doing?
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean it's a big paradox, which is, you know, on one side you know, make yourself vulnerable when you're open, but on the other side, when you're closed, you're not really alive.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And I just had a dialogue with a relative of mine on the other side of the ocean there, And we had a little friction recently just about how we communicate. And he had said to me, my second cousin, don't you accept us for how we are? And I said, I do. And I'd like you to accept me for how I am. And let's just move forward and try and find that neutral towards positive ground. Otherwise, why are we even communicating?
Was he open to that?
Is there a net benefit to this, you know?
Was he open to what you were saying, or was he responsive?
As a matter of fact, he had first said, my second cousin had said to me, he's the one who said it, don't you accept that that's how we are? Because, you know, I'll tell you the exact. There's a book written recently about Gaza by a famous author in Europe, and he sent it to me to read. I said, oh, that's a really nice present. And I said to him, I'd like to speak with your wife because she is a psychotherapist of some sort where she deals with people and she sees how animals react around them in order to recommend a protocol of behavior so that person with the issues can then get along better in their corporate environment. She does something like that with horses over there in Europe. So I wanted to speak with her about just what I believe about the state of the world, where we all came from, what is this existence about, and then start to read this book that he really vehemently wants me to read. And he said, oh, gee, her English isn't that good. She doesn't want to do that. And, you know, she knows nothing about the current state of affair with Gaza and Israel and blah, blah, blah. I said, yeah, but she her field is psychology and sociology. You're telling me I said to him, is she embarrassed? He said, don't you accept that for how it is? I said, you know what? You're right. I'm going to accept her feelings, her thoughts, that she'd rather not have that dialogue with me before I start to read this book. That's fine. I'll just discuss it with him. And it was very liberating to have that conversation with him, because it's like, it's almost like a tabula rasa. It's like a lot of negative back and forth between he and I, my second cousin, for many years, seems to be just lifted away.
It sounds like you decided to accept what he was saying. Look, here's a boundary. She's not going to talk to you. And for whatever reason, it doesn't matter. You just decided you're not going to challenge that. And you're going to, have harmony between you and him. And that seems
and
like it worked.
Really good. Yes. And it feels really good because it's like, okay, we're at a better point to now move forward and find some happiness and some joy in this short life of ours,
Right on.
Very liberating. Yeah. So thank you for listening. I appreciate it.
Yeah, Attila, thank you so much. Call us again. Really appreciate it. And hope you have a good Valentine's Day.
Thank you. You too. God bless the two of you. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, there's a great example of accepting the reality.
Yeah. I mean, he could have...
dropping the blame.
Yeah, I mean, that could have been, grounds for another argument, but, he kind of said, okay, this is my cousin, I want the relationship, and it's worth it to me to just let it go, be non-materialistic about it.
Yeah. Just accept. Listen, hear what somebody is saying, let it be.
Absolutely. So... we played that clip about ideas about fighting fair. If you had any thoughts about it, or if you have any experiences you want to share with us about people that you've struggled with in your life to have a better relationship with and what that struggle looked like, call us at 212-209-2877.
Can I bring in something here? It's, my husband passed away a year and a bit ago. Valentine's was our anniversary.
Mm.
We were both really lazy about remembering dates, and we decided that was a safe date. And it didn't really make it, we weren't terribly good about celebrating the day. But it always makes me think, so this is my second Valentine's since, remembering that fine line between being open and clear about where you're at, and at the same time accepting where somebody else is at. You know, it makes me revisit, you know, situations where I can't go back and I can't make them any better than they were.
Yeah.
And I want people to get it right while they can with the people that are around them. That line between being open and at the same time letting somebody else be open.
Yeah. Yeah, it's it can be challenging in some relationships and it's easier in others. You know, the challenging ones are, you know, it's hard to find a way to let go. I mean, what Attila was saying, and you know what you're saying too, it's about acceptance.
Yeah, you don't want to pave over things, and at the same time you want to respect somebody else's choices. My husband was somebody who had come from a home with a lot of conflict, and he liked peace. He liked peace and quiet, and he would let things go. And there were times when I'd be saying to him, no, but tell me what you think. Tell me what you feel. Tell me what... And he'd go, no, not important. Yeah. Not needed.
Let it go. That's hard. We have another caller on the line. Why don't you take that, Elaine?
Okay, this is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
Hello, Elaine and Arnin.
Hi.
This has got to be Crystal.
I'm calling late only because this was the only time I was able to call, and I'm standing in the street.
You're in time. You're in time. Tell us what's on your mind.
So the word forgiveness to me, normally someone would have to admit they're wrong, and then you choose to forgive them or not to forgive them. But the way we use that word in this society, you have to forgive and move on. In other words, a person can do something wrong to you, and they don't have to ask you for forgiveness, but we say, you have to forgive them and move on. To me, that doesn't make sense, but we don't have time to really get into that right now. Technically, the last person I tried to stop communicating with was because the person to me was male chauvinist. Even though he worships his mother, he claims, by the way he talks, but he's always sounding like he's trying to school you when he talks to you.
Mansplaining, eh?
Yeah.
They call it mansplaining, right? When a male is trying to, like, make, you know, just give you explanations that are kind of apparent that you know, but they're assuming because you're a woman or, you know, because you're younger or whatever, that you don't know something, so you wind up getting mansplained.
Yeah, I think it's because I'm a woman. That he talks to me that I think it's because I'm a woman. And he tries.
But at the same time, you don't want to carry the burden of his stupidity or whatever we call it. You don't want to be burdened by it. So you want to let go of it for yourself.
I think the only reason why I stayed friends with him, we're actually phone friends. We don't really get together. But he says my voice is melodious, but he has a very sexy voice.
Tell him
we'll
to
have
meet
to
us.
Have him call, yeah. Definitely.
He has very sexy voice.
But you've got a very good voice too, Crystal. Later. He's right.
If I call him later, he may talk to me, but he's probably listening right now, so he's not going to call me because he's mad at me now because I called him out.
I hear you. So he knows you're talking about him. Crystal, we have other calls online that we got to get to, but thank you so much for sharing with us.
And have a great Valentine's Day.
All right. Thanks, Crystal. And this is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling? Where are you calling from? Hello?
Yeah, caller hung up.
Okay. Oh. Okay. So we'll just keep going here. Our number is 212-209-2877. We might have time for another call or two if you want to squeeze one in. We're talking about dealing with relationships and kind of letting go when it's necessary to know when to let go, because sometimes we don't know when to let go.
So, Arnell, this website that we were citing from Woody Schultz, it sounded very interesting. Aid.com? Therapistaid.com.
Yeah, therapistaid.com. Maybe you could read us a little from that, Elaine.
Okay. Every relationship has disagreements. It's how we handle those disagreements that counts. A bad argument can turn even a little problem into a big one, making it emotionally charged and painful. And this is where fair fighting rules come in. Fair fighting rules don't tell us we can't argue. Instead, they tell us how to do it safely. They tell us what's okay and what's crossing the line in an argument. So before you begin, ask yourself why you feel upset. Are you angry because your partner left the mustard on the counter? Are you angry because you feel like you're doing an uneven share of the housework? And this is just one more piece of evidence. Take time to think about your own feelings before starting an argument. And then, this is a tough one, discuss one topic at a time.
Yep.
Don't let you left the dishes in the sink turn into you watch too much TV and everything that goes with that. The discussion that gets off topic are more likely to get heated and less likely to solve the original problem. Choose one topic and stick to it.
And let's interrupt right here because we have another caller on the line. Elaine, why don't you take that one?
Okay, this is WBAI. You're on the air. Who's calling and where are you calling from?
Hello?
Hi, hello.
Yeah, you got to turn your radio down because otherwise okay. We'll be slapping back.
Okay, I'm calling from Brooklyn, New York, listening to your show.
What's your name?
Anthony.
Hey, Anthony.
Okay, brother. So my question is, how do people, when in disagreement, husband and wife, boyfriend and girlfriend, but mostly husband and wife, how do they find that common ground where they both could understand that the other one felt one way and this person felt that way, where there is no... How do you get to that point where you go on to the next step and you let that all go? I read a book many years ago called The New Earth, and it explained how two monks were walking down a road, one of the analogies, and one monk saw somebody help somebody. And moments later, a while later, the other month, you're still talking about it. Like, how do you let that go? How does two people, when there's a disagreement, find a point where they just let it go and they move on? If they're going to be together, how do you get to that point?
Well, you know, there are a lot of techniques you can use. I mean, one is to not just let something go where it's forgotten about, but to say, you know what, we're hitting a wall here. Why don't we agree to talk about this tomorrow evening at 7 p.m.? You know, something like that where, you know, you just say, right now we're just banging heads. Why don't we revisit this? That's one way. Another way is to find, another way into the conversation, another way to talk, you know. I mean, is there anything in particular that you're talking about, a particular issue?
Well, it has to do with generality of our relationship, and buying property, or buying a house, and where we're going to live, and I try not to remind others of mistakes made in their life.
I admit
to my mistakes I made in my life.
Anthony, that's what you need to do. And, you know, it sounds like you're doing something right. And I wish we had more time to go further into that with you. But we're at the end of the show, Anthony. So thank you for calling and call us again.
You.
And we actually are out of time, Elaine.
Oh, boy. That was such a great example. Thank you.
Yeah. You've been listening to Naturalistic Support's Look at Improving Our Relationships, Part 2. I'm Arnell Duray, and joining me today was Elaine Durbach. Thanks a lot, Elaine.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure.
Also, thanks to our fearless engineer, Rick Johnson, and to Hilla Weiss for her support. Tune in again next Wednesday at 2 p.m. for another edition of our program. Archived editions of Naturalistic Support can be found on our website at WBAI.org and at EqualTimeForFreeThought.org. Hi to my foster mom, Marilyn, and stay where you are, because coming right up is the Katie Halper Show. And remember, always try to be kind, because you never really know what someone else is going through.